Hey everybody, it is February 15th, 2021. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening. As you know, we're part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. All that's over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. And you go over there, you can join our consortium. It's free. We'd love to hear your voice for equity. You can see our wonderful magazine. It's an online journal called Equity and Access. You can just click on the icon there. You'll see a big magazine cover. If you go over to ace-ed.org and just read through the magazine, you'll really enjoy it. It's really well done and has a lot of great information. And I might add advertisers in there as well. All right, and all our podcasts are over there. All the icons for LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook are there. If you want to just follow me, it's Education Talk Radio on LinkedIn. No, I got that wrong. On Facebook, it's Education Talk Radio. All right. On LinkedIn, it's Larry Jacobs. And on Twitter, it's EduTalk Radio. We have three different ways just to mix you up. Okay, let's do it again. LinkedIn, okay, is Larry Jacobs or Education Talk Radio. Twitter is EduTalk Radio, and then Facebook is Larry Jacobs. Okay, so just do that. And by the way, that's me. I got a nice show for you today. We've got Dave Carey here. Dave is a real K-12 education evangelist, and he's written a really good book, which you guys would all like to read. It's called A Nation at Even Greater Risk, and it basically talks about how to fully prepare 80% of today's minority teens to be winners and succeed in K-12 and go on to a very successful life, as opposed to the basically 20% we're doing right now. Okay, and Dave, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks, Larry. Appreciate it.
Hey, buddy, it's good to have you here. I'm glad we were able to do this. It was kind of a slushy ice storm here, and I was worried yesterday that we were going to maybe lose our electricity here in Maine, but thank God we did not. Everything's cool, and it wasn't much of a storm at all. And Dave's out in California, so he actually put on mittens when I told him there was going to be an ice storm. That's how much. Right, power of suggestion.
Well, thanks for... Yeah, as a former Wisconsinite, I sympathize with you and realize I made a good decision moving to California. But
we can talk about that. Okay, we can talk about whether that's a good decision or not. You may be, from what I'm reading, you may be moving to Idaho soon. Everybody else is. Pack your bags.
So thanks for letting me share, and thanks for anybody listening out there. Shows a lot of commitment to. I would say our kids, so I definitely respect anybody who tunes in.
Thank you. On behalf of them. Okay, we do. And, it's interesting. Again, the book is called A Nation at Even Greater Risk. And how do people get that book? Let's just get that right out of the way and up here. Dave?
Well, I have for your listeners, if anybody would like one, I'm happy to give an e-copy of the pre-release version. I really just have a couple things to finish out before I fully release it and sell it. But anybody dedicated, if you have a cause, Larry, that you'd like to promote or have them contribute to, I'm happy to give them an e-copy at this point. It's more about getting the information out there to people than it is
good book too.
Making money. So
good, cool. Well, where do they go to get it? How do they? Did you want it to go through me, or does it usually goes through you? Go through you.
Either end or. So they could either go to neweraschools.com, and I'll post it up there with a code for you guys. Or probably best thing is just have them come to your site, and they can download it there.
Yeah.
So
best thing is go to your site. That way, trust me, it's easier. Okay, New ERA Schools, neweraschools.com, okay, right?
Yep.
Okay, good. Believe me, it's easier because there's a lot of stuff they have to remember with mine. It's another thing we'd have to go through. It's easier if it just runs through yours, neweraschools.com, and I really appreciate that, Dave. I really, really do.
No problem.
All right. Yeah, we're going to talk about all this. And oh, by the way, I have the e-copy, and I do have to tell you one funny typo in there. Okay, you ready?
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
At the very beginning, you have a quote from John Kennedy.
Yeah.
You spelled Kennedy wrong. You left out a D. You have Kendi. And that's the old teacher in me. It makes people crazy.
Oh, yes, sir.
Give. See it?
I have my red line final red line copy here. I just circled it. So.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent. No problem. Because John F. Kennedy, nobody cares about it. Nobody cares about John F. Kennedy. We care about Kennedy. All right, so I just figured I'd let you know about that E, which I thought was funny when I read it, of all the damn things to spell wrong. Okay, it's funny. All right, how to fully prepare 80%, this is what your whole thesis is, rather than 20% of minority teens to win. And I just want to ask, tell people who you are. You know, it's easy to say you're an evangelist for better education, but your background and how you got into all this stuff.
Okay. Well, I mean, I won't bore people with my childhood, but I did have a pretty unique, what I'd call all-American childhood, largely because of basketball. I got to grow up in two worlds, and kind of a working-class white suburb, and playgrounds and projects downtown Milwaukee. Grow up with real winners, NCAA and NBA champions. And when I grew up and we moved to a new community, and it's actually America's most diverse city between Oakland and Napa.
What city is it? Tell people what city we're talking about.
It's Vallejo, California. It's got some famous athletes and entertainers from here, CC Sabathia, et cetera. But the guy who wrote Remember the Titans, great community, great people.
Oh, yeah.
So to pay it forward, go ahead.
No, go. You go. I didn't know about the guy who wrote Remember the Titans, but go ahead.
Yeah, so to pay it forward, I thought my way would be a basketball camp called Black Belt Basketball. We had about 200 kids come out a couple nights a week and Saturday mornings, all volunteers, fell in love with the kids, the community. Just a great town all about their kids.
Yeah, and I know you love it.
Our school... Yeah, and if you go to our site, you can actually see some old videos. They're pretty heartwarming. But our school district failed both academically and fiscally. And fiscally, we received the largest per capita bailout in California state history.
Wow.
And when I started looking into it, only about 15% of our kids were really ready for college, either because they dropped out or just didn't have the academic skills to succeed. So when all this came down, I had a vision.
When was this?
This was 2004 is when the district failed. So it's been quite a while, but the story remains the same.
Yep.
So had a vision, what I would now call New Era Schools, and basically it went to the guy who took over the district and said, hey, I think if we need to think differently. The handwriting's on the wall that to cut, and when you do that, you chase your tail, right? You start with teachers and programs and sports and music and art and close schools, and the other option is to think entrepreneurially and create best schools.
Yep.
And so that was my pitch, and that's what New Era is about. It's that the need for our kids in the future of America is one of and, not either or. We can't pick between the right and left brain. We have to educate kids fully. And so I pitched that a little bit, and it largely got deer in headlight kind of look. So I knew some people that knew some people. They said, go travel the country, and I did, and I started looking at what the winners did, and it was pretty similar to what we had in mind, and I'd like to think ours was a little bit more whole child inclusive, but a better overall educational experience, but figured out what the core elements were, and we tried to start a charter, and I spent a whole lot of my own time and money trying to get that going, came really close a couple of times to getting funded. But in the end, I guess like Douglas MacArthur once said, we're not retreating, we're advancing in another direction. So that's why I wrote the book, and just trying to share and provide what some people would call truth, but what I consider proof of what works. And And then that really, in a lot of ways, upends conventional wisdom and dogma. And I now fully believe that it is possible to quadruple the percentage of college-ready with the, you know, poor minority, rural, the kids who are not on average succeeding today, and doubling the overall percentage of kids that can go to college if they want to and succeed in college. So I know it's not for what everybody wants, and it shouldn't necessarily be, but you know, 2/3 of jobs today now require somebody with a college-ready skill set, and our current system produces half of that. So we need to seriously up our game, so to speak. And so I'm still a little naive. So I guess I think if people really understood what works and what doesn't, that we might actually reform all of our schools, and then 90% of the what I'd call able-minded kids could win. And that's regardless of economic circumstance. And so that's what I'm trying to accomplish, and get people to realize that education is the root of and the solution to really most of America's biggest socioeconomic issues, poverty, inequality, all those kinds of things.
Of course.
If people have the education they need, a lot of these things go away, at least to a large extent. So so wrote the book, and maybe one day we'll do a documentary or something, and that's kind of... Yeah,
so let me ask you this, okay? I want to ask you one thing. First of all, I think you've already answered this. Vallejo schools, are they still, I'll say, not good? Mediocre?
Okay.
How are they now?
Well, that's one of the things the book actually addresses. So it's not that they're not good. They actually perform. There's no such thing, actually. It's just one of the insights of the book is that there's really no such thing between what I'd call a good and a bad school, in that Vallejo schools, yeah, only 15% of the kids probably still are ready for college. But if with a different lens, you'll find that that's actually that they perform equally to schools like the ones in Napa that we consider good schools. And that's got nuance to it, and I can explain that in a little bit. So only just like Oakland, just like the other cities across America.
So in other words, it's a national malaise. It's a national malaise is what you're talking about here. And you're using Vallejo as the example. Okay. Am I right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, cool.
You couldn't have said it better.
There you go. So with all that said, okay, so now we've moved you nationally as opposed to just Vallejo. But with all that said, okay, what are you trying to accomplish, okay, with the book? Who are you trying to influence, and what do you hope to happen? I just want to narrow that down as we start here.
Yeah, so I think first you have to educate people as to what works and what doesn't. And there's really one or two things that we could do as a nation to make a huge difference. And there's not really a good reason that every school across America doesn't consider doing it. And the results would be
phenomenal.
Don't
leave us in suspense. What are they?
Well, the biggest thing is moving to a longer day, longer year. Fundamentally, the reason why these kids are not succeeding is that they don't study enough to make it to college. And that's not a fault of the teachers. That's not a fault of the children. A lot of it is just, frankly, circumstance, right? They have kids that come from different backgrounds and different socioeconomic circumstance and life circumstances, whether they have two parents and they're working, whether they speak the language, how many kids are in the home. Frankly, the paradigm shift is that it's naive to believe that every parent has the time, energy, inclination, aptitude to successfully tutor all their kids. So
the pandemic problem, Dave. It's a pandemic problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kids are home now. I mean, for the most part, they're home.
Yeah. And that's its own complication, which I'm not sure this is a conversation that really addresses that. But we do know that schools that move to longer day year round, and our model was keep the kids in the core classes for a little bit longer, finish the homework in class where there's a teacher in theory to help them, And it worked.
Yes.
And some of the data, the analytics that we show in the book, shows a 200 point game across demographics, which is what it takes to get to college. And so it's basically a 2-grade level change for these kids. And it's the difference between dropping out or thinking getting a fake diploma and getting real mastery.
Yeah.
And so that's the first fundamental thing I would say we need to do.
What's the second? What's the second?
Another thing I talk about for a fair amount in the book are different models of the winners. And one of them is really unique. They really got kind of ran out of Oakland. But the model was from American Indian Model Schools. And basically what they did is they made one-room classrooms out of their school. And so one teacher for the middle school students, they would loop them. So they would stay together and be a family. The teacher would learn the learning styles, the excuses, et cetera, of each of the kids, and they would bond. And they turned a school that had, on a 1,000-point scale, a school that was about to be closed, from 440 points out of 1,000 to 990. It's the school average. Their graduates averaged $30,000 a year college scholarships.
Nice.
Go ahead.
All right, so let me ask you this.
And
you know, the things you were saying, and, you know, homework isn't as popular as it used to be. Let me just say it that way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
I question your syntax there, because I think it's syntax, because if you're not doing homework at home, it's not homework anymore. There you go.
Correct.
Do your homework
classwork.
At school. It's not homework, right?
Yeah.
It's that simple. But, you know, why do you suppose, and you said it before, that the gentleman or the lady looked you like a deer in the headlights, we got to make these changes. And I agree with you, okay? We are in a system, and my standard example, it hasn't changed in so long, we still send kids in most states home for the summer so they can help harvest. Okay, and they're not really harvesting much anymore. Okay, so it doesn't.
No.
The system hasn't changed much. Okay, now things are changing. All right, but what is it that you think? Now that person you talk to, that person's an educator. He or she wants kids to succeed. They do. Okay, it's that simple.
Yeah.
So they looked at you like a deer in the headlights. What's holding back the changes? What's holding back change, in your opinion? And I'd love your opinion, because you're on the outside, so to speak, looking at what's holding back change.
Yeah, so I think so. So what is it? What makes people resist change most is that they think it's going to be more work, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be, right? The longer schedule doesn't have to mean more work for teachers. In fact, I believe it can mean less and more rewarding work, because the kids will succeed, right? So the other thing that you have to do, okay, so you say, it really comes down to how do you fund this? Well, once you realize that smaller classes, smaller schools, all the other things didn't make any systemic impact, then you can realize, well, you can put the money elsewhere toward a longer day, longer year, and there's enough teachers to spread around to make the longer day year happen without making more work for each individual teacher. So, I mean, there are charters that, and they get the results, and that's not what I'm advocating for. I'm advocating for just being smarter about things, and let's not make teachers have teachers. My God, that is a hard job.
It is
a
brutal
teacher, and especially when you're thinking you got 180 kids to manage each semester and get to know. It's an impossible task, right? And you send them home and they don't study. And some of the class did their work, and some of them did it. I can't imagine.
The classic answer is you manage that at home. You know what you're talking about? I'm thinking here as you're talking. You know, my family practice person that I go to, the doctor. It's a pretty big practice with like 5 doctors, okay. And I rarely see my doctor. I see my doctor, okay, maybe once a year, maybe. All right, but there's a whole staff, okay, of physicians' assistants and nurse practitioners who I can see all the time. Mm-hmm. They're extremely competent. Extremely competent. They're very good at what they do. But we're not doing that enough, okay, in education. No. Okay? And when you say, you know, we need more hours with these kids, it doesn't have to be on the, quote, teacher. Okay?
Right.
It can be on these other people who are trained, perhaps not as deeply, but who are trained to do the work. And these are the kind of things, and I've been in business a long time. I was a teacher many, many years ago and was in business, you know, since then. And it's a different set. And when you can see, you have to be able to move. If you're in a bureaucratic system, okay, it's very hard to make change. And these are the kind of changes that they need. And I'm not talking about, quote, a teacher aide who's just helping a teacher with some of the kids who may need it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about, you know, a real a nurse practitioner for a teacher who works with 2 or 3 of them, and a teaching assistant who really is a well-trained teaching assistant, okay, on a major scale. It's that kind of thing. And I want to ask you something, you know. We're dealing with a bureaucratic system, but you're very concerned, right, if I'm not mistaken, trust me, I know you like all kids, but you're really concerned about minority teens. Am I right? I'm assuming like kids of color. Am I correct?
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm in an interracial marriage, and my wife has said the same thing to me, but it's not really true. I'm a coach, fundamentally, right?
I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm saying it in a good way. Yeah, it wasn't meant to be a derogatory statement.
I get it. I get that. And, yeah, I am, because they're the kids that were not helping succeed on average, but they're just, you know, there's actually probably in total – more white kids and more rural kids.
Well,
it's just an American problem. Yeah.
So let me ask you. So I want to put this in perspective of what we do here, okay? Which is that equity perspective, okay? Which I'm sure you're familiar with that word and how it affects education.
Sure.
And obviously, that's what we've been talking about. Actually, without saying the word, we've been talking about that this whole time, okay? So, but from your point of view, okay, and what you're trying to accomplish, David, I mean, it's just kind of like put it all in equity context. If I ask you, I'm going to ask you to do that. If I ask you to do that, what do you say?
Well, ironically, even when California was one of the least funded states, our model generated greater income in low-income areas than it did in middle-income areas. It was easier to do this longer-day school based on the programs and initiatives that were in place. And since that time, you know, the governor, Jerry Brown, has put actually more funding. So it's possible to do this now. So I'm an advocate for winning, okay? And I'd like every school to do the things that are necessary to help all kids win. I'm of the philosophy that my kids are all Americans, right? They're not black, they're not white, they're both. But we call them all Americans. And I really am just focused on what does it take to help every kid reach their potential. If that's a kid with greater potential in one area than another, then we ought to be fostering that, and we ought to be shoring up their weaknesses. It's just like basketball, right? If you said that the homework thing earlier, if you want, if John Wooden believed in repetition, right? Some of this is just basic fundamentals. If you want to win, there's a certain amount of work that you gotta put in, and
there's 10,000 hours. Last I heard, 10,000 hours is the old Malcolm Gladwell line. And by the way, everybody, John Wooden used to coach UCLA. He's one of the greatest. Yeah, a lot of people are too young. Okay, I'll put it into perspective. John Wooden was one of the greatest college basketball coaches of all time, UCLA, when UCLA was the premier program in the universe for college basketball.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah,
absolutely. So
yeah.
But, yeah, you also touched something that I would like to mention real quick, which
is
the teacher aid thing. And that's starting what I call mixing in hybrid learning, or we're starting to – I think we have to think about things differently from a curriculum standpoint and from a standpoint of there are certain things that I call core, and there are certain subjects that I call enrichment, right? So – our model, our mission of New Era was to develop what we called entrepreneurial renaissance athletes fit to challenge life and strengthen mankind. And so some of the things we thought of doing were taking a Peloton and learning your foreign language on a Peloton and Zooming with kids around the world, right? I think some of these things are actually going on now. But why not double up? It's all about a big part of it in being able to succeed is learning time management. And part of time management is figuring out how to get two things done at the same time, right? Getting on a Peloton, get you your exercise, or running on a track or whatever, learning your foreign language. That's what executives do, right? They're going to listen to a book.
That's right.
They're going to exercise. Bring these 10 ideas to the classroom, save a little bit of money, put it toward teacher pay, get a full year-round school, make your school a community hub. You know, the idea of New Era was to be open from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m., 360 days a year. It was going to be a community center, middle school, high school, a community hub, you know, a home away from home for these kids.
Yes.
And use the facility. Why are we bouncing kids around from after school to soccer practice somewhere else, or to, you know, why do some of these learning centers, Sylvan, et cetera, exist? They shouldn't. We should just educate the kids and provide a space, bring in the retirees, have them teach cooking at night or whatever it is, business or investing. There's so many different things that just make learning fun, but recognize that it's not gonna. You do have to put some amount of time into it. So that's what we're trying to tell people.
Yeah, you know, there was when I was reading your book, and I didn't read the whole thing, but I read a lot of it. I'll say, okay. And one of the things that struck me, and I can't remember where it was in the book. I think towards the beginning. Okay, and you said that if I read it correctly. Different communities have different needs, okay? Yet our system, although we do provide a lot of food for people, our system, okay, is kind of the same everywhere, okay? And I'll just say 8 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon, and, you know, there's differences within that, et cetera. But there are communities where parents are not used to this kind of learning and this kind of success, okay, where the kids need more. And there are other places where they don't need the same. In other words, we have a system that's the same everywhere, basically. But we don't need to have it that way. We can adjust the system to the needs of the community. Okay? And I love the way you had that in there. And it's something that most places, they look at it a little bit. Okay? And they do what they can. Do what they can. And again, there's a, you know, the school during this pandemic fed millions of kids. Kids would have starved if it hadn't been for the schools,
right.
Okay, over this last time. So, yeah, we do do that to a great extent. But we got to do it more. And we have to really look at, and I agree with you, changing the damn system to meet the needs of what's going on now in your community. There are ways to do that. And they don't have to be ultra expensive, et cetera. You know, we're looking for change in the system. And the pandemic, as horrible as it is, exposed a lot of things that were bad, okay, throughout the whole system. That's throughout society, but we're talking education here, okay? And now is the time to start really making changes. Okay, this is the opportunity, and my classic example, I just used it again yesterday, is the British healthcare system. After World War II, the healthcare system was destroyed. They built a new one from scratch, okay, because they saw the problems with the first one. They had the opportunity to build a new one because there was nothing left of the old one, okay? And we got to use this pandemic to make the change, to really look at ourselves and make the changes that everybody always wanted to make. That person you talk to at your school district, believe me, they want to make changes, but they're hamstrung, okay? But they can mm-hmm. make them now, okay? And I just like I'd like your thoughts on this, Mr. Author, okay? Dave, making the changes now, strike while the iron is hot, however you want to say that. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with you 100%. We're so overdue with making these changes. It's numbing.
Yeah, now we've suddenly got the opportunity. We've always been overdue for making these changes, but we never have the opportunity to really look at ourselves and change them. Now we do.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, Rahm Emanuel said one thing, right? In crisis brings opportunity, right? And there's that old thing that they say that. In one of the Japanese or whatever, that this supposedly a synonymous word. Not sure that's actually true when I looked it up, but the idea that crisis and opportunity go hand in hand is definitely one. But I think the bigger crisis is that we just haven't actually made any real progress, and we've got, you know, 2 out of 3 kids not being fully prepared, and what that means for them and their future in our nation is ought to get us up and do something. Whether you're scared by that or you just see an opportunity, we our kids, once upon a time, the most we put women and children first, we've got to put
kids
first.
Yeah, but the boat sunk.
Right.
So we didn't work out as well as we thought. But, it's interesting, and I'll tell you how hard it is to make a change. You know, there's not a educator in the world who doesn't know one thing. If you let teenagers sleep later, they're going to do better. Okay? They're going to do better. The longer they sleep, they're going to do better. Yet every school still starts at 8 or 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, everybody's known that for 50 years. But I don't think there's a school in America that starts at 11 for the teenagers. Okay? Even though everybody knows it. Okay? That it would work. And it's just one of these things of a bureaucratic system. So let me ask you this, okay? This is going to be a funny question, okay? You started thinking about this in 2004. It's 2021. Hello? Okay? That's a long time. How frustrated are you? Are you frustrated?
I was a lot more frustrated really 5-6 years ago. I mean, we had people who could write a check and make this happen, and they told us they loved it and everything else, but it just never happened, right? There was always a catch-22, and that darn near drove me insane. My marriage, we were separated for a little bit. You know, it's probably more information that I need to share with people, but we're back, and I just, life is more balanced, and I think it really came down to that MacArthur statement saying, find another way, right? Do what you can do. Another way, if
advance in a different direction.
I
love that quote, by the way.
Somebody will come along and say, here's the money to start. I love your model. Great, that'll happen. But if not, I wrote it in the business plan, the BHAG was, be the final catalyst to educational change. And I don't know what that means, but maybe it's a movie, right? Maybe it's a documentary like The Inconvenient Truth that change people's minds, and I don't know what it will be. And so advance in a different direction and keep everything in perspective. Change is hard. And if you're thinking about starting a charter, my advice is to get a mass of people behind it first.
Well, we can do it. You know, I'll tell you, Dave, if you want to, you know, we have our magazine. I don't know if you've been to the website at ace-ed.org.
Yeah,
but we
yeah.
have our magazine, and if you'd like to do an article for us, you're welcome to. We have an equity focus, but you know, if you can take what you're saying and make an equity film, we'd love to have something from you. get the word out to about 150,000 educators. Yeah, my pleasure. Are you kidding?
Wow.
I love you. Okay, you're great, basketball man. You're great. Okay? So we love
Thank
you.
You very
quote
much.
John Wooden. And always keep that in mind, okay? So I have to tell you, you know, John Wooden was a great coach, but now you're an old fart officially because you mentioned him. Okay, because they don't know anymore. They're kids out there, you know. They're kids. We're the old guys.
Well, and if you're
quote Kobe.
Interested in
they
looking
love Kobe.
Up John Wooden,
he was great.
Look him up in Kareem, and how he treated his players, of all races and backgrounds, and why Kareem went to UCLA versus all the other people promising shortcuts. John offered no shortcuts. He just offered success. And look him
but
up.
But you are 7 foot one.
Thank
it's
you.
Easier. I mean, you can do that.
Well,
I love that guy. He's great. I'm only kidding. I love Kareem. Okay, and I remember him when he was Lou Alcindor at Power Memorial. Remember? In New York years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do, and I was – I grew up in Milwaukee when he was throwing skyhooks. So,
that's right. The Bucks. I forgot about that. Right. Wow.
That's
I forgot
right.
about
with
that.
The, with the Bucks.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
Then I moved to California and was a Laker fan.
Now I know why you moved to California. I finally figured that out. Okay. Now I got it. Okay. Yeah,
it's funny.
All
right. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Oh, it's always great, David. I'll be back in touch with you today. Okay, and we'll get an article together. All right.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you,
Larry,
sir,
and everybody who joined. All right, take care. Bye bye.
Thank you, Dave. Bye bye. Dave Carey, everybody. Okay, who wrote a terrific book? It's called "A Nation at Even Greater Risk," and Dave's website is. What's going on here? Dave's website. Something just happened on my other phone. Dave's website is New ERA Schools, New Era Schools.com, and you can get the book over there. All right, and we'll put it up here on our website as well when you're listening to the show. So I'm Larry Jacobs. That was Dave Carey. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Everything we do is over at ace-ed.org. So go over there and join with us for equity. Thanks for listening.